This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
As mentioned, this month we've been taking a look at single-use plastics.
Yesterday, we spoke to the plastics manufacturing industry, Datuk Lim Kok Boon, president of the Malaysian Plastics Manufacturers Association. He shared his thoughts with us, and one of his key arguments was that we can't do away with single-use plastics, or what he calls SUPs, at the moment because there's just no viable alternative for now.
When we use the word you can't live without it, it's because that's truly the situation. If you look at our modern way of life is that we need food. And one of the key things about SUP is that it's used to pack food. So if you do away with SUPs, then we have this problem of how do you get food from farm to table. That's a huge problem. And at this point in time, there is no viable alternative other than to go back to the days where we wrap food in newspapers or in some other things, which is not possible now because with the modern life that we have, the farm, which is a source of food, is far away from the point of consumption, which is people who live in the cities. So I think that's something that we have to accept that we can't live without it.
All right. With that said, though, today we're taking a look at the impact of single-use plastics on marine ecosystems and coastal communities.
We're crossing over to Dr. Serena Abdulrahman, visiting fellow at the ICES Yusof Ishak Institute. Serena, thanks for joining us on the show. You co-founded Kelab Alami, which is a community development project at Tanjung Kupang in Johor that also does research on environmental changes at the mangrove swamp, as well as how it affects the local community. Have you witnessed any impact of single-use plastics on the ecosystem and on the local community?
Well, on the local community, not really an impact on them, but they use single-use plastics a lot. I think this is common across, well, everywhere really in Southeast Asia. The impact on the ecosystem is very clear. I think it's the same as it is in the rest of Southeast Asia, that single-use plastics will eventually end up at sea. Because they are quite carelessly tossed by the roadside or into drains or streams, and then it'll all float down to sea. So the impact really is to the point of when you go out to the seagrass, so you go out to the mangroves, you will see all of these plastic bits and lots of other rubbish stuck on the mangroves or floating amongst the seagrass. I have seen fish chewing on plastic bags full of rubbish because people just tossed it out.
So can you help us understand how the plastic trash actually ends up in the coastal environment? Because I could see how there's a disconnect in terms of why I might have thrown a plastic bottle on land, but then it ends up in the ocean.
Right. Anything you toss on land, it could be from, you know, Cameron Highlands, it could be in a desert, it will eventually get carried to some sort of waterway by wind, by storms. It'll float out to some kind of waterway. So it could be a river, a stream, a longkang. All of that eventually connects to the sea. So it might take time from the time it's been tossed in a desert or on top of Cameron Highlands, but eventually it will end up in a river system, and river systems always end up at sea. So it seems like everything will eventually end up there, and then there's nowhere else for it to go other than to disintegrate and end up at the bottom of the ocean or inside fish. So while it seems quite distant that if you're in the middle of a city, like in the middle of KL, and then you just chuck a cigarette butt out of your car onto the road, it's actually not that far away because, you know, things travel either by wind or rolling into a drain, and all of that, sadly, is actually just going to have outfall straight into the sea somewhere.
Why are single-use plastics in particular harmful to marine environments?
I don't think it's a matter of single-use plastics. Like, some plastic bags are used 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, and then they happen to get tossed. The thing is, plastics last forever. So whether it's a single-use plastic or multiple-use plastic, whether we're taking those recyclable containers that you can stick in the microwave, eventually that will get thrown somewhere. And if it doesn't end up in a landfill, or if it doesn't actually get recycled into something else, It could end up as marine debris. So marine debris is any kind of rubbish that ends up at sea. It could even be a plastic chair. It could be a TV. It could be a fridge. If you do a coastal cleanup, you're picking up all of these things, syringes. It's incredible what you find when you do a cleanup. You know, long ago, people would use things like banana leaves and natural products that you could actually chuck off your house porch, and it doesn't really have an impact. But we've progressed so quickly, so fast into things that last forever that the habit has not gone away. Sadly, there's also this sense of, never mind us, somebody's going to pick it up for me. There'll be cleaners. This is also quite common in city areas, not just in villages. So this then causes people to have less ownership over what they're doing and take less responsibility for what they're throwing out quite carelessly.
There's the worry that microplastics gets into the human body when we eat fish. Is that accurate, and could you break it down for us?
Plastics last forever. Like, if you have something that's plastic, it could be like a hair clip, or, you know, it could be anything really. That thing could outlast your life, because they can last for 100 over years, right? But it becomes brittle. So once it goes into the sea, it gets hit by ocean currents, the waves and all of that, it will break down into smaller parts. So what happens then is that you've got lots and lots and lots of these smaller parts rotating within the oceans, because in the oceans there are currents that kind of go around in circles. So anything caught in these currents just end up going round and round between the continents for years, for decades. And so they have traced this. They have traced rubbish that came off the coast of Japan, and it just spun in this, they call it the gyra, and it spun in there for like 50 years, and all it did was break down into smaller pieces. It never really disintegrates. If you have glass, the origins of glass is sand. And if that gets hit by waves and it gets stuck in this gyra, then it eventually breaks down into sand again. Plastic, however, is processed chemically. And so a lot of it actually originates as petroleum byproducts. But it is processed with chemicals, and we're so good at doing this that we've created a material that lasts so long that it cannot go back to its original form. It's going to take like hundreds of years for it to, I don't know, melt back into petroleum, or, you know, if it's buried under the seabed, I don't even know if it's possible. But what it does do is break down into tiny, tiny, tiny pieces that we can't see. And what eats this actually are things that ingest anything in the water. So either by filtering, so it could be sponges, it could be squirts, it could be jellyfish. And so how these animals function is it takes in a lot of water, it siphons in the water, but then it spits the water out, and it keeps whatever nutrients or plankton or whatever it is that should be feeding it. However, plastic does not come out again. So plastic stay within these animals. So let's say a smaller animal eats it, like a jellyfish. And then a larger fish eats a jellyfish, and then a larger fish eats that fish. So what you have is an accumulation of plastics, chemicals, anything else that's bad that's floating in the sea. So, you know, it can accumulate that way, or larger fish can just eat bits of plastic, not because it wants to eat plastic, or, you know, turtles, they always say, mistake plastic for jellyfish. They don't want to eat plastic. It's just that they mistake it for other food, and then they die from it being in their stomach. So it's not just the small fish that we eat. It's also the big fish that nowadays you see whales, you see all kinds of species washing up onto shore and their stomachs are full of plastic. You see birds. Marine birds have been eating plastic for at least, you know, a couple of decades. There's lots of research that was going on this more than 10 years ago. The only thing now, it's become very fashionable. So it's great because everybody's talking about it. 12 years ago, nobody knew anything about any of this going on.
In terms of scale, how big is the problem? How much plastic is there in our oceans?
In 2005, when I started giving talks about marine debris, there was one large rubbish patch in the Pacific Ocean that was larger than a couple of states in the U.S., like big states. Within a couple of years, they discovered another rubbish patch floating in the southern gyre, also in the Pacific Ocean. Now, 12 years later, or more than that, they found, I think, 3 or 4 different rubbish patches. So what it is in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which is bigger than we can actually imagine, there's just lots and lots of rubbish floating and going around in circles. That's what you see. If you go deeper into the water, there's a whole bunch of this rubbish that has already sunk. And so it's sunk to the seabed. So what that does is that you have, the deep water animals eating that. And so sometimes what you see at the surface might look like a door, but actually it's a shipping container that's fallen in the water and it's floating vertically in the water. So the scale of the rubbish problem is huge. There are so many videos on YouTube where you see the amounts of plastic rushing out of rivers when the tide changes and there's more plastic than water, it looks like. It is just a river full of plastic. And these usually, unfortunately, come from Southeast Asia. But it's not saying that we are the only culprits here. You know, this is a problem worldwide. There's all kinds of sources for marine debris. Sometimes it's accidents. So shipping cargo falls off and then you have all kinds of things floating out there. It's serious.
So the idea of rivers of plastic, of islands of plastic, it's utterly horrifying. How do you end up cleaning, or how do you even try to clean up all that plastic, whether in whole form or when it's breaking down?
This is the golden question. Nobody actually owns the Pacific Ocean or any other ocean. So who's going to take responsibility for cleaning up? Who's going to pay for it? Other than CSR, goodwill, a lot of people are not going to come up with the cash to do this because it doesn't serve them direct benefits. Unfortunately, this is how capitalism works. It's very selfish. There have been some efforts recently to invent a lot of innovations like floating things that can collect rubbish as it pours over the edge of this little floating dustbin. There was a young person, I forget his name, but he was like in his early 20s or late teens, and he invented this thing that could sweep up rubbish at the surface of the ocean. But the ocean is so huge. And again, you're only catching what's at the top. You can't see, you can't get to what's sunk to the bottom because it's incredibly deep now. It's a couple of kilometers deep. In the Mariana Trench, for example, they've also found plastic particles. I can't imagine, I don't know how we're going to clean all of this up. But any effort that takes place now counts because every little bit helps, right? Every year there are global coastal cleanups that take place. Every now and then some CSR effort will clean up a beach or a river or something. Everything counts, but the key to all of this is teaching people not to throw rubbish discriminately, and then beyond that is to teach people not to use plastic so much. So if you don't get to the bottom of the problem, which is we're using too much plastic, we're not recycling, we're not refraining from buying so many things, so we don't have so many things to throw away, we're not going to cure this problem.
The current global poster child against plastics is the plastic straw. But how much impact does the rhetoric on plastic straws have on improving the environment? Because, for example, a fast food chain stops giving straws automatically, but continues to use non-recyclable packaging for their food.
Yeah, the straws are a good fashionable way of bringing people into the cause, right? I think it's, these things are like fads. So what's fashionable, let's do this, let's take a stand, let's show that we're making an effort. But then you have people buying metal straws in plastic wrap, right? So that sort of defeats the purpose. There's also the question of how much energy and how much waste is going into producing those metal straws, for example. There's so many other things that are a problem beyond straws. There's plastic bags. That used to be a fashion for a while. And countries all over the world were banning plastic bags. Now they're banning straws. For a while, they were banning styrofoam or polystyrene packaging and then replacing it with plastic packaging. And then if you want to take it to another level and say wrap everything in banana leaf, we don't have enough banana trees to do this, and it's not that you can get banana trees in temperate countries. So the question really is an overall understanding of how much cost there is to these replacements. It's very good to stop using straws because they really are wasteful. And if every person did it and there's 1 million people in a country and 1 million people stopped, that's 1 million straws at a time that that somebody has a drink and does not take a straw, it does have a positive impact. But people need to get beyond the superficial, and they need to do more than just stop taking a straw. They need to understand that their packaging around everything else is unnecessary. Like, you buy shoes and it's got paper stuffed in it, paper around it, it's got a box, it's got a tag. All of that has an environmental impact. All of that takes energy to make, and using energy also has an environmental impact. I think consumption is a problem. If we could cut down on our consumption so much that it stops or reduces the production of things, we would do the planet a whole lot more good than just saying no to straws. Not saying that saying no is not good enough. Every little bit counts, but we could do a whole lot more.
Serena, thank you so much for that perspective. That was Dr. Serena Abdulrahman, visiting fellow at the IC's Yusof Ishak Institute and co-founder of Club Alami. We'll be continuing our 101 look on single-use plastics tomorrow at 7, so do join us for that again. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.